from Team Cerralongo, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is Candy Sugar Free Code Tour, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
John Wertheim, author of Blood and Gate. Got
schooled
by FightNerd.com.
This is Marty Kamen. You're watching FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome back to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is July 6, 2009. It's been a slow news week here in the MMA world, but we're going to find stuff to talk about anyway. Coming up today, we're going to have Dan the Upgrade Lazone. He's going to be talking about his match against Chris Horodecki at Affliction coming up the start of August. But joining us today in the hot seat, we're going to have my co-host, which is Brian Last, MMA enthusiast and entrepreneur. Brian, thanks for being here.
Hi, Fight Nerd. How are you?
I'm good, as always, of course, Brian. Thanks for being here. It's been a very, very slow week, hasn't it, Brian? It's really just the calm for the storm before UFC 100. But before we start talking about any of that stuff, I want to talk a little about your history in the sport and what got you first into mixed martial arts.
I will also say Michael Jackson died. I mean, that's been a... I think maybe there's been a small amount of MMA news because many of the followers and enthusiasts of the sport have been so deeply hurt by the passing of the King of Pop. My connection with the sport is I bought a couple of pay-per-views when it first came out. I mean, when I was 13 at the time, I purchased the first UFC pay-per-view. I purchased every single one after that point until Cablevision decided to ban it from the island. And then that really hurt my interest in it because there was no portal to see it. There was no platform to see it on. It wasn't on pay-per-view. It wasn't on regular television. Underground tape trading, if anything. And I kind of got back into it when the UFC got on Spike. It made me remember that it was there. I had heard about Pride, but I'd never seen it. But I saw the UFC, and it got me interested because a lot of the fighters that they were showcasing at the time were fighters I originally knew, like Ken Shamrock and Hoyce Gracie. And then I became aware of the younger fighters as I saw them. Against the older veterans and just in general being around on the card. And I became a fan of the sport. I realized why I originally liked the sport. It's different now, obviously. There are rules and time limits. But I've always been a big fan of it. I've always thought the martial arts and mixed martial arts was a great sport. And I don't know if that answers any part of your question. I don't even know what I just said.
I think bits and pieces of it answered. And you had to mention Michael Jackson, of course. I've been trying to pride myself as being the only podcast not to mention him lately, but you had to bring it up. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Hee hee. Shamon.
I'm going to have to edit that out later. And do you have a favorite fighter, by the way?
It's very difficult to pick a fighter nowadays that I really enjoy.
It's very hard to call, you know. It's always, even when we first asked the question on the very first show, it's hard to really nail down one guy. So you feel free to name a few guys if you'd like, but generally, you know, who's the guy you like to watch the most, maybe?
You know, I'm fascinated by Lesnar, but I don't know if I'd call him my favorite fighter, but I certainly want to see, Fedor. Fedor's my favorite fighter, easily. Because every time he fights, I get genuinely excited. And then I watch the streamed illegal replay over and over again.
Which we don't know about. We know nothing about those illegal streams.
I do. I know plenty about it. Come sue me. But I watch him over.
You heard that, Brian Last. Please sue him, not the Fight Nerd.
Don't sue the Fight Nerd. Trust me. There's no attorney on retainer in this case for a Fight Nerd. But I check it out over and over. I like to see the replays of the Fedor fights. I find myself genuinely excited when Fedor fights. And other than that, all time, I thought Takhtarov was really great. I really learned to appreciate him much more when he came back for the Yama show and the Bodog show right before that and showed that his skills were still there. He still fought the same game and got two guys caught in a knee bar, including Mark Kerr, who had never submitted before. So I'd say maybe in terms of the classic guys, Takhtarov and Tank Abbott. In terms of the newer guys or current guys, Fedor, easily. By far. I mean, I think Fedor is as good a fighter and as exciting a fighter. He has that big event aura about him, which is why I originally said Brock Lesnar, but it's kind of like I'm watching him until someone beats him. I want to see someone beat him. That's why I'm watching him, for no good reason. I mean, it's just me being a prick. I want to see someone destroy Lesnar. I love the first Frank Mir fight, and you brought up UFC 100, which we're on the cusp of, and him and Mir the rematch, and I don't know if Mir is going to win, but I kind of hope he gets him in a knee bar again. I mean, it'd be wonderful.
I'm going to have to put you on the spot a little bit later and get your picks for that fight near the end of the show. But it is kind of funny you mentioned, you know, watching these big-time fighters have undefeated records lose. A lot of fans do kind of want to see that that fall down. It's like seeing, you know, the guy on the top just get brought down to the bottom. What do you think that fascination is of fans? That's not just, you know, the sport of MMA. That's a lot of other sports where the guy on top fans want to see come down.
You know, I think that's just an issue with society. You want to tear down anyone. I mean, we brought up Michael Jackson. We joked about him a little bit already, but there's a case in point, and maybe he didn't help his case too much by sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber and buying the elephant man's bones. And
you mean you don't do that stuff?
And becoming white, you know, but, you know, there's a good example of this guy was as big as it gets, as good as it gets, and the media, and with that society, tore him down. And I think you just see that with anything. You know, Obama had a sweet honeymoon, and I vote, and I'm a supporter of Obama. Let me throw that in there before, so you don't just think I'm just some, you know, crazy right wing guy. But the honeymoon's
just crazy. That's all.
Yeah, left wing. But the honeymoon's over. You know, you're seeing people now. Bill Maher, who's as liberal as it gets, starting to rip him. So I just think, you know, in our society, that's just you know, whoever's the top dog, you always want to see him brought down. You know, the Yankees will. You know, the Yankees were great, but there were always plenty of people who wanted to see the Yankees go down in a plane crash.
Yeah. Now, other news, you know, I can't really say news. It's been such a slow news week. It's really the calm before the storm of UFC 100. Not much has been happening. Really no other shows are going on in the U.S. this weekend. This show is in Britain, in Japan. I believe there's one in Canada, probably. Not that Canada matters. But they're going all over the place. Nothing's really, you know, no one's competing with the UFC. Do you think that's just the UFC has scared them off?
I just think maybe it's a case of, you know, there aren't too many bad promoters have been scared off. There are not enough good promoters. I think Scott Coker's a good promoter. He doesn't have anything coming up. And he, I mean, he has something coming up, but it's not imminent.
There's nothing this weekend. That's the thing. It's like no one is trying to compete at all with the UFC for pay-per-view sale. It's like they just know not even to try and fight back, because God knows what the UFC would do. Like we've seen in the past when the Affliction and the UFC went head-to-head. That was not pretty.
Well, it's not even just the UFC, but the UFC is such a major profit center for cable television and pay-per-view television specifically, that why would any of the pay-per-view companies or any of the cable companies do anything that would be conducive towards an independent promoter being able to compete with them? There really is no good reason. I mean, if In Demand, who exists solely to facilitate pay-per-view events, to all the cable operators who, by the way, own In Demand, what good does it do them to promote another fight company or help another fight company promote the same weekend as the UFC? It does them no good, because so much of their money for pay-per-view, I mean, In-Demand's purely pay-per-view, comes from WWE and UFC. And that's really it. So they're going to do anything they can to help the favorite nation. And that's good business. I mean, who's to go against them for that?
And speaking of some good business, we're going to move on to some possible bad business now. This is really non-news, because we've kind of learned to ignore what this guy says. We're going to talk now about Tito Ortiz, who's always somehow managed to find himself in the news somehow. And recently he's been talking a lot of stuff, saying he's very close to signing a deal with Strikeforce. He's going to be starting up his own company called Punishment Fighting Championships. And really, can we believe anything Tito says at this point? We've seen him in the past talk about, oh, I'm close to signing a deal with Affliction, and Donald Trump Jr. says no. We've seen him in the past talk about Elite XC deals. That was said no. And now again, the Strikeforce deal that's been going on in the past, negotiations for who knows how long, and now Mike Afremovitz has also said no. So, Brian, what do you think about all this Tito Ortiz craziness here? He's trying to get himself in the news again, or do you think it's something that is actually legitimately on the way for him?
You know, I don't know, but I've always had this feeling that every single thing that Tito does is a desperate plea for the UFC's attention. You know, I've always seen Tito as kind of like a scorned lover.
It's like the stepchild trying to get the love from the dad he never had.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he knows for Tito, like, will put up with him, but he just wants Dana to give him a hug. It's the way it's always seemed to me. I mean, you know, otherwise, just sign a fucking contract with someone and start fighting. I mean, instead, he turns everything into a spectacle. He may do this, he may do that.
He might do Jenna Jameson tonight.
He may. That poor, I mean,
I was surprised there's no sex tape yet between Tito and Jenna, too. I mean, that'd be a good money market for him, probably. Who would want to pay to see that? That's another story, but it would possibly be some money and get him back in the mainstream news again.
There's a reason they invented illegal streams, and there's one of them. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm not going to say what Tito's going to do until he does it, because everything he's done so far has just been about self-promotion. And like I said, I really believe he just wants the UFC to give him a hug, give him a kiss, and sign him to a new deal.
Well, who doesn't want to hug Dana White? In other news, former rival of Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, has announced he's going to be taking a year off, according to Sports Illustrated. Chuck Liddell has lost, out of the last five fights, four of those fights. His only win has been to Vanderlei Silva, and it sounds like he's going to take some time off, maybe think about some options, and think about going back into fighting. So, in my opinion, it's probably a good idea for him, but, you know, really, taking a year off and not fighting might be actually more detrimental to him and his career. Brian, any thoughts on this subject?
Well, you brought up the Vanderlei Silva fight, and I think that fight was... It's easy to forget because Chuck has been destroyed severely several times since and right before. But that was a really great fight. And Chuck really did a great job in that fight. I've never been a big Chuck Liddell fan. I always thought Chuck Liddell was the favorite boy of the Fertittas and Dana White. Because, I mean, Dana managed Chuck and Tito before the Fertittas bought the UFC. So, obviously, the first guys they really promoted and turned into, and attempted to turn into crossover celebrities, you know, a Best Damn Sports Show and all that nonsense. Or Chuck and Tito. So, I mean, I've always thought that Chuck wasn't as good as everyone made him out to be. It was just that he was protected. But that fight with Vanderlei really showed me a lot. And it's interesting. It was at a late stage in his career.
Definitely passed his prime at that point.
Definitely passed his prime. I mean, you could argue when his prime was, but definitely. But that was really a great showing. And it's very hard for any fighter to walk away, obviously. And I think Dana White, and I don't know Dana,
I have no Dana either.
So I'm just assuming, but Dana White apparently is very good friends with Chuck and cares a bunch about him and is saying, you know, please walk away. He doesn't want to be sad, you know? I mean, it's difficult, though. I mean, none of these sports ever have anyone who walks away. Baseball, you're forced to because, you know, you can't take a beat-up player and put him in there for four at-bats a game. But in fighting, a guy could still get in there because they still have their aura and they still have the mystique up until the point they step into the ring or the cage.
But at what point do they start turning into Dan Severn, where he's like, they're like at 50 years old, they're still fighting no-name guys? What's the point of him going on that long?
I mean, the point is, what are they going to do? You know, what's Chuck Liddell going to do with his days and do with his time? I mean, maybe he'll still train, and you would hope so. I mean, it's, you know, it's a good thing to continue with. But without the fight, without training towards something, training towards a fight, I don't know what he... You know, I don't know what he does. Does he paint? Does he play video games? Who knows what he'll do? He may need that. He may need that energy that he gets to train for a fight. And I think that's been the case for other guys, too.
Randy Couture, for example, who's retired, I think, what, two or three times now at this point? He's turning into the Terry Funk of the sport, if you will.
What's he supposed to do? His whole life, he was an amateur wrestler. He left amateur wrestling, became a UFC fighter in the era when there was no money in the sport, too, in the dark era. What else is he going to do with his life? Become a fireman?
It's a strange thing since, you know, really the sport is still in such an infancy stage. You know, think about it. It's only been 15, maybe 20 years of mixed martial arts. So, you know, a lot of these fighters, still they're starting to hit the age where they can retire. But really, what happens once they retire? It's so few options for these fighters, especially since they were fighting these old-time guys. They've been fighting back when their paydays were garbage. So, strange time.
I think you're going to see, I hope you see uprisings in a sense, but I think you'll see a lot of the problems that plagued the professional wrestling industry. You know, and that guys had no union, they had no pension, nothing to protect them from the future. They weren't trained in any job skills to make it in the workforce. You know, they work up until their body breaks down, or their mind breaks down, whichever first. And then they go and they fight on smaller shows until they get wheeled to the shows and just sit there and sign autographs. It's a very sad existence, and, you know, you would hope that a lot of these guys have financial planners and money managers and people who could help them out, but I can understand it. You know, if you're a fight nerd for your whole life, and then eventually someone says, okay, you can't be the fight nerd anymore, what are you going to do?
I'm going to choke them out. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, there you go, and that's what Chuck wants to do. They're saying you're not a fighter anymore. He wants to be a fighter. I think it's obvious the guy still wants to fight. He's getting pressure from his promoter, maybe his manager too, not to. But, you know, what else does he know, man? And his name is still as big as ever. I mean, I believe that, even though he's been beaten badly.
He definitely still has mainstream power. I mean, he's been a poster boy for the UFC for some time. He's still recognizable. I mean, how can you forget that mohawk to begin with?
He's the most recognizable face they've ever had. Ever. And to this day, he still is. And it's going to kind of be like Tank Abbott, maybe. I mean, Tank's still fighting. What is he, like 47, 48? I don't know. I mean,
can you really compare Tank to Chuck Liddell, though? I mean, because Tank's record has been... not exactly a shining record either.
You know, I can't either because I think Tank does it more for the money than for the internal desire. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know Tank. I'm just assuming. And I'm not putting any sort of negative connotation on doing it for the money either.
The possibility I see with Chuck Liddell is him becoming a gatekeeper, which is not necessarily a good thing. It'd keep him on fights, but really, you know, what's the purpose of that? He's not going to be a title contender. At least I don't personally think he's going to be a title contender ever again. He's really peaked after, in my opinion, the Randy Couture fights. Those were his big time, and after that, you know, he had some good fights, but that was really his peak for me. Chuck has a gatekeeper. I mean, we could see that. What do you think about Chuck becoming a gatekeeper? I think it's better for him just to hang it up altogether or take fights that really are just below him at this point, and he might risk losing and tarnishing his record even more.
Well, I think, you know, first thing you just said, I think Chuck may not be a legitimate title contender in the UFC, but I think if he went anywhere else, mainly Japan or Strikeforce, he would immediately be. I mean, he would almost refresh his career. I'm sure he's not going to do that. I'm sure he's so tied into the UFC deep that he's not going to go out there and test the free agent marketplace. But if he did, he would be a fresh title contender everywhere he went. He would have fresh opponents everywhere he went. It may rejuvenate his career. What do I think of gatekeepers? I think it's sad. I mean, what we talked about before, my first re-exposure to the UFC was the era of Hoist Gracie coming back and Ken Shamrock coming back, and even to an extent, Kimo and Tank Abbott, who you didn't respect as much as the others, but they were still part of that initial wave. And it's sad. It's sad to see. You don't want to see him like that. You don't. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like an old writer, a writer who ages. It's cute that they become old, you know? It's
old and bitter, usually.
Yeah. Well, instead, you're going to see a fighter become old and bitter and still want to fight. And you're not going to want to see it after a while. You're going to wish you could see them 10 years earlier. But
and then we'll start getting those legends matchups like we've seen in the past where it's old-timers, which is fine. It's good to see old-timers go at it. But and I use the word old-timers. It might sound a little bad, but I mean the legends in the sport really is where I should be using. We're seeing these guys come up. They're going to be fighting each other. How relevant is it now also?
You know, it's like some rock bands, you know. I know people who are into seeing the Stones live. And I love the Stones, but I don't want to see them anymore because they're old. But I know people who are into seeing them. And they still have a rock star aura, and it's still you're seeing a rock star. But then there's so many bands out there in their 50s and 60s, even 40s. They're just old men. It depresses you, especially if you've never seen them in their peak. To see them at that point, you don't want to see it. It's just terribly depressing.
It's kind of like you had just mentioned before, Oleg Taktarov submitting Mark Kerr. I mean, that was really good. That actually was a very good match. The problem was, you know, how relevant was it? That's unfortunate because that was a really good match. That could have been at one point a heavyweight title match in the UFC.
You know, I actually think it was a good match. I think it was impressive the display of mat technique that Oleg put on.
By the way, we're talking about this match, which was in Yama Pit Fighting. If everybody remembers that. Or might not want to remember that, but that's what this match was from. It was one of the few shining gems in Yama, but we're going to talk about that another day.
April 11th, 2008.
We survived the Yama, did you?
But I thought it was quite impressive. But yeah, it was sad because I think for so many of us, the lasting impression of Mark Kerr was the smashing machine. This guy juiced up to the gills, nice guy, despite his addictions. You wanted to pull for him. You wanted to root for him. And here you're seeing him. He's not even 40 yet. He's out of shape. He's beaten down. And a guy who never submitted in a minute and a half or 2 minutes and a half, whatever it was. It's very sad.
But it was a very competitive fight for that minute and a half. Now, something else I want to talk about. We've been discussing a little bit about what little facts we know about the upcoming EA MMA game. They've made a few more announcements recently. There's been a few more developments possibly rumored to happen. But one thing that has happened for sure at this point is that Zuffa is now blacklisting any fighters who appear in the EA mixed martial arts game that will come out, meaning that they will not be allowed to ever fight in the UFC if they fight. Now, we have come to expect this from the UFC by now. There's an article on the Fight Nerd site that kind of talks a little bit about the sponsors who have recently been blacklisted again, including fighters and shirt companies. Now, for what really bugs me about this is that if you watch the last UFC, you'll notice on the mats, and I'm sure UFCs previously, EA has been a sponsor of the UFC in the past, especially with their Fight Night series. They've constantly sponsored the UFC, and now they've become a competitor. So automatically, within a week, they've become blacklisted. And, you know, we've come to expect this from Zuffa, but is this kind of petty at this point to be banning, you know, fighters now who are trying to make a living off their likeness?
It's completely petty. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's Zuffa making another in its many series of attempts of controlling the entire marketplace. It's nothing that we haven't seen before, nothing that Vince McMahon didn't try, doing everything he could to wipe out his competition and control everything about his independent contractors.
Now, we've seen on the forums all the time people calling Dana White the Vince McMahon of MMA, and it's a pretty accurate portrayal of Dana sometimes. You know, for every good thing he's done for the sport, he's done two or three that you just look at him and shake your head and say, no, you idiot, I'm going to choke you out one day.
It's the same thing. Their ideas were to come in there, control the fighters, control the shows, and eventually control everything else, and including the merchandising and the distribution and everything else. You know, but I don't know how realistic it is. I mean, Fedor is going to do this game. Fedor knocks out Josh Barnett, let's say, and beats a couple other guys, is a free agent, and the Russians will finally, you know, and the UFC together, actually, I should say, will be realistic and come together and negotiate. They're going to deny Fedor because he's in a game that EA is putting on? I mean, that's a bunch of bullshit. I mean, they're gonna sign whoever they can get, whenever they can get him, if the means meet.
Well, one of the interesting things we've discussed that's been kind of popping up is that Randy Couture might actually be in this game. Now, Randy Couture has never had his likeness in any video games before because he doesn't want to lose the rights to that. He recently had the Round 5 action figure, which you can still find in many stores. And that's really the first time I've actually seen his face on any merchandise. And in fact, he's not even going to be on the Jack Specific action figure line that's going to be coming out near the end of this year. But there is word he will appear in the EA game. It's still a rumor. But if he appears in the EA game and he still, you know, has a UFC contract, what's going to happen with that? Are we going to see another fallout between Randy and Dana White?
I don't know. I wasn't aware that he had an EA contract for the game, so I can't really...
Nothing yet. It's still rumored. It's still definitely rumored. But, you know, we've seen in the past, like I've mentioned, Randy has not given out his likeness rights, and the UFC has been scooping those up and allegedly not paying any fighters for that likeness rights.
You know, the problem, it's a catch-22, man. You know, the UFC has the biggest platform, most notoriety, and they're doing everything they can to control and restrict the fighters in terms of revenue. And you need the UFC. I mean, if you're a fighter and you want to make money, you need the UFC. You need to hope that you can rise among, you know, above the ranks, get to the top, make big money, get a pay-per-view share, get some merchandising. But if you're not, if you're one of these smaller fighters who's making nothing, who's sleeping on a couch while training, then you need help. You need sponsors. You need an EA video game or whatever other video game that will pay you such small residuals that it's ridiculous, that it almost makes it questionable why UFC is doing this other than to be pricks. There's no reason for it. It's not like, you know, the average fighter, the fight nerd, is going to make $1 million off the UFC video or off the EA video game. You're going to make $200, and then you're going to have to worry about being shut out of another fight promotion.
It's very petty, for sure. I mean, and of course, as I mentioned before, they're going to be banning more sponsors now, and they're going to be charging now a $100,000 fee for sponsors. It's just getting a little stupid right now. Have you played the new UFC game yet, Brian?
You know, I haven't. The other day, my cousin and myself were in a video game store for some... we're actually interested in purchasing it. But anyway, we were in the store, and he tried out the UFC game. I've only seen demos. I haven't actually participated in any. It seems incredible, and everyone you talk to who has played it or knows someone who's played it tells you that the reviews are perfect, that it's the best fight game ever. I'm still a fan of the old-school Pride game that was on PS2.
That's really, a lot of fans, I think, still agree that's probably one of the best games considering that era of gaming we had for PS2. That was a pretty awesome game.
Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe there's something I need to unlock, and I don't know about it, but there was no Fedor, so that got me mad. But I used Wanderlei Silva, and I was just kneeing everyone in the face the whole time. It was wonderful. I ended up winning, and it's one of the few video games I play against other people that I'm good at. So,
you ever try making your own character? Because I usually didn't play as the guys in the game. I actually made myself in it, and of course, somehow I ended up beating everybody. Go figure.
You know, I haven't. I do that in baseball games. I create myself and watch myself be overwhelmed by major league pitching. But I need to do that for a fight game. That's a fun idea. That's a real fun idea.
That's one of my favorite things to do with any of these like pro wrestling games or any MMA games, kickboxing games, anything you can make a fighter in it. I'm doing that right away. I make all my friends in it. We just go at it. And I think we one time had a 16-man World Grand Prix that I have in the Pride game. I'm sure you've done that before.
Yeah.
And we had all of us in there. I ended up winning in the finals. In fact, I ended up beating Kazuyuki Fujita. I won by Hurricane Rana, and then I got him in an armbar.
Wow. That sounds like it would be the number one rated show on New Year's Eve.
That should definitely be. So, any Japanese opponents out there who are listening, I'm ready to fight Fujita. You let me know the time, you let me know the place, I will be there. I will hurricane on him over the top rope. Let's make it happen.
If there's anyone out there who could actually make this happen, I'll put up all the money. To see the fight nerd against Fujita, I'll put up every cent of the money to see this.
I'm calling an Ironhead. This is official now. I'm gonna be the first guy to knock him out. That's what I'm looking to do. I'm not content with the submission. I'm not going to just take a limb home. I'm going to knock him out. He's going to be kissing the mat, and I'll be standing on top of him holding... Well, he's never had a belt, so never... Well, he's had an IWGP belt, but...
What does that matter?
It's a nice looking belt. I'll give it that at least.
It's a very nice looking belt. It costs like, what, $15,000?
It's pretty expensive. I know. I remember the Pride Grand Prix belt from 2000, of course, I'm going to mention that. The first ever Open Weight Grand Prix they did. That belt actually cost more than what the winner of the Grand Prix got. I think the grand prize was $200,000, and the belt actually cost, I think, $225,000 or $250,000, because it was solid gold. It made Mark Coleman look tiny. Remember that belt? That was a pretty amazing belt.
That's right. I mean, that's a... Can you imagine being in that position to pay that much for a belt?
Or just a belt. I mean, I'm a pretty big belt fanatic. It's an odd thing to talk about, but I'm a fan of championship belts. And the Grand Prix belt is so nice. I want to get my hands on that one day. I wonder what Mark Coleman does with that belt. What do you think he does? Is it at home, just shining every day? Do you think he wears it around the house?
I think he brings it to the pawn shop once a week and sees if he can get the money he thinks it's worth.
And on that note, Brian Last now officially calling out Mark Coleman for a match. So we're going to have Fight Nerd taking on Fujita and Brian Last against Mark Coleman. So any promoters out there want to do it, let's get it on.
I may add, he may not live in close proximity to a pawn shop. But I'm sure the thought has entered his mind.
I'm sure he has the wheels to make it happen. So on that note, we're going to head over to a few messages from some of our sponsors. Coming up next, after the break, we're going to hear from the Upgrade, Dan Lazone. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7. Or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Coming up on August 1st, Affliction is going to hold their third mixed martial arts event, aptly named Trilogy, at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. On that show, we're going to see a really, really exciting lightweight fight coming up. Chris Hordecki is going to take on the man we have in the studio today, Dan the Upgrade Lazone. Dan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So how's training going so far for this fight?
Training's going pretty good. I've had a couple ups and downs in this training camp a little bit, but overall, it's going pretty good. And, I'm in pretty good shape, and, a couple more weeks of training, and I'll be ready to go.
Are you doing anything special to take on Hordecki, or just normal training?
Pretty much normal training. I pretty much know what to expect going into the fight. I expect, he's going to try to keep it on the feet, but he's a good kickboxer, and, his ground game is what he lacks, and, my ground game is my strength, and, but I got power in my hands, and, I don't really mind trading with people, but, like I said, I'm just training for, like any other fight.
I don't know if you had a chance to see it. Hordecki just fought very recently in the Ultimate Chaos card. Do you have a chance to see his match against Shreepi?
Yeah, actually, I saw the fight.
What did you think of that? Did he impress you with anything?
He came out, he ended up taking the guy's back, sitting down with him, set the hooks in, and went to work, and he got the choke, after a little bit of a struggle, but he got it. That's good though, because I want him to win like that. I want him to be confident in his down game. I want him to think that he has a chance that the fight goes to the ground.
All right, now last time also, at the last Affliction show, you took on a tune-up fight also against Justin Hammerstrom in the WCF. This time you didn't take another tune-up fight. What happened there? Were you trying to set up a fight and this never happened, or did you just say, you wanted a good break before this match?
Yeah, actually, I was trying to set up a tune-up fight for, I was going to fight June 27th, and because, Affliction at the time, they didn't know when the next card was going to be. So I was looking for a tune-up fight. I finally got something lined up. I had an opponent. It was going to be a guy from New York who was a two-time state champ wrestler from New York, wrestled in Virginia, just a good wrestler. That was supposed to be my tune-up fight, and then right after that got set up, Affliction ended up contacting me, and, the next was going to be August 1st, and, it just didn't really make sense to take that fight, and, it was Affliction, only like 4 weeks after, 5 weeks after. know, just wasn't really worth it, you know, taking the risk, you know, fighting in a smaller show and risking the fight with Horda. So, didn't end up working out.
Now, with that said, it's been 6 months since we last saw you fight at Affliction 2. Do you think you're going to be a little rusty in the ring?
No, not at all. I mean, I've been training right along the whole way. You know, this is probably my longest layoff, you know, and, you know, I've had since I started fighting, but, you know, I don't think it's going to be a big deal at all. You know, actually, I think it's a little bit better for me. I think, you know, when I go into this fight, I'm going to be hungry. You know, I can't wait to get in there again and just get after it. So, you know, I think it's actually going to help me out a little bit.
All right, it's good to be hungry. I'm pretty hungry right now, but that's unrelated to anything else.
I'm hungry in general. Anyway, I'm dieting down now, so.
All right, well, there you go.
I'm hungry all the way around. I'm hungry for food. I'm hungry to, you know, punch someone in the face. I'm just, you know, ready to go.
Which one are you more hungry for right now?
Right now, I'm more hungry for food.
All right, that's good to know. Me too. Now, you and Chris Hordecki were supposed to fight at Affliction 2, but unfortunately his license was denied because of some bulging discs in his neck, and he had to take on Bobby Green, very last-minute replacement. And I just want to set the record straight right now with you on the air, because there's been a controversy about that fight since it happened, with fans saying you got... Well, what happened in the fight was you got kicked in the groin, I believe, twice. But a lot of fans are like saying, no, you're just bitching out. I mean, what's your response to that?
I wasn't faking any of it. I mean, I'm not a bitch. I don't fake an injury like that. You know, the first one, he kicked me square in the nuts, you know, and anything after that, you know, just a little bit of a tap is going to hurt anyway. The first time, and, you know, I was like, you know, accidents happen, it's not. Then the second one, he kneed me, and then I was like, all right, really? You know, two already? You know, it's the first round, and then, the third one, you know, a lot of people say, you know, it just, you know, skinned me with his big toe or whatever Tito was saying. But, you know, if you watch the video, you know, I'm a soap bar and I was actually stepping back with my front foot and I was squared. Like, my feet were squared up and his toes went right across the front of my cup. And, you know, like I said, I already been hit twice in the nuts. I mean, anything after that is going to hurt. And I actually ended up getting a cyst, actually, in my balls from that fight. I actually have a cyst still in my balls.
So there, you can't deny it there.
I'm thinking, you know, that's an old thing, you know, that's whatever. I mean, you know, Tito was the one that was on the air, you know, saying, you know, he's faking this and that, you know. If Tito says anything, you know, people are just going to jump on the bandwagon to support him because, you know, he's Tito. But, you know, I could just sit there and say, you know, Tito was faking when, you know, he got poked in the eye or whatever by Chuck Liddell, you know, but, you know, whatever, you know. You don't know. You're like, I don't know if he was faking when he got poked in the eye. I don't think he was. You know, I'm just using that as an example. And, you know, he can't sit there and tell me I'm faking. He's not the one that got kicked in the nuts. He doesn't know what I was feeling at that time, so.
Yeah, and really, no matter how soft you hit there, it's still the nuts. It hurts no matter what. So, I mean, there's no denying that. And besides, Tito, whatever he says really is important anyway. He was terrible at that show. But that's a whole other story for another day.
Yeah.
Now, how much is internet stuff do you bother reading? I mean, do you keep up with what these people say on the forums and stuff, or are you just kind of trying to keep your mind straight? Because I know you're on Facebook quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on my Facebook quite a bit, and, you know, that's it really. You know, I used to go on MMA.TV quite a bit, but I've actually shied away from it now. Just, you know, too many people, you know, on there that think they know everything and they get all the answers, and, you know, they're the guys that don't even train or fight or anything. You know, they're just on there trying to get a rise out of people, and, you know, so I just shy away from it. I don't really post on MMA.TV anymore just because, you know, it's just not worth it, you know, fighting with those guys. They're a bunch of clowns, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's not worth it.
Yep, I gotcha. All right, now, back to Hordecki. He has only had one loss in his MMA career so far. That was in the IFL, which was, well, not too long ago, against Ryan Schultz. Is there anything you could actually take from that fight to help you in your fight? Or, I mean, for the most part, you're just taking a look at his wins, since he has so many of them.
You know, there's not much, you know, I could take from the fight with Schultz. I mean, you know, Schultz, you know, had the perfect game plan. He came out, he took him down, you know, he took Hordecki, you know, to his weakest point of his game, which is, you know, him being on his back. And, you know, that's no secret, though. Everybody knows that when they're fighting Hordecki, that is, you know, his weakness is his ground game. But, you know, just his overall record, you know, just looking at it, you know, his first six fights is when he had all those knockouts, you know, and he was just fighting lower competition guys. And then, you know, his last six wins, you know, have all been decisions, with the exception of, you know, this one this past week, you know, the 0.70 got his first finish victory. But, you know, if you just look at his record, you can just kind of tell, you know, I don't really think, you know, when you watch him fight, I don't really think he has too much power in his hands. You know, anytime he fights anybody that's, you know, good or, you know, has a good chin, you know, he doesn't put him away. He doesn't finish guys. He just, you know, he's a good kickboxer. It's nice to, you know, throw a couple punches, finish up with a kick, or, you know, throw a kick, throw some punches, finish with a kick again. You know, he, like I said, he just likes to get a card, score some points, and move away. And, you know, just look good for the judges, and that's why he gets the decision. You know, he doesn't try to put anybody away. And, you know, so I don't really think he has the power to put me away, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see come August 1st.
Are you planning to put him away, or are you trying to get a decision also? Does it matter to you, or just whatever works?
I'm putting him away.
All right.
That's the only way I want to win, you know? If I don't put somebody away, you know, I don't even feel like it's a win, you know? That's just, you know, you get a judge's decision, you know? That's only what they think, you know? If you're going to win, I want to put somebody away. I don't want to hurt them.
All right. Sounds good to me. Now, also on the Affliction card, Mark Hominick is going to be fighting a fighter named Davidas Torcevicus, who you had also previously fought for, and you lost to Torcevicus. I hate saying his name. It's so long. Would you ever want a rematch with this guy?
Yeah. I'd like to rematch with him at some point, you know. He's real good. He's tough. He's strong. You know, I mean, it's not a fight that I would be excited about because, you know, I know how good he is. I felt his strength. And, you know, you just look at his last couple fights, you know, he's only getting better and better as he goes on. But, yeah, you know, I'd like to like a rematch. I'd like to avenge that loss, of course.
Well, who would you be excited to take on?
In Affliction?
Or just in general, you know, if, you know, outside of Affliction, anywhere in general, who do you want to fight after Horodecki?
After Horodecki? No one really comes to mind except, you know, I'd like to fight my brother. I mean, you know, I think that'd be a good fight, you know. You know, we fight all the time outside of the gym. You know, we might as well just, you know, fight and get paid for it, you know. I'd love to throw down with him and, you know, see what's up.
Who would win that fight, you or Joe?
You know, it'd be a close fight. You know, we go back and forth. You know, a lot of people, you know, think Joe's a lot better than me. But you know, my nickname's the Upgrade for a reason. And you know, of course, I'm a new. You know, I gotta say I would win because you know he would say he's gonna win. And but you know, I gotta be confident in myself. And you know, if I was gonna fight him, you know, I shouldn't be fighting him if I thought he was gonna win. You know, so you know, I'm very confident in myself. And you know, I think I'd take the fight, but it wouldn't be easy. It would be back and forth. There would be a war, and, you know, it would just be, you know, awesome fight for the fans, and, you know, like I said, I'd love to punch him in the face.
I remember reading on Joe's blog, you guys had a UFC Undisputed video game for quite some time, and he was blogging about all the experiences he had in it. Were you guys ever going toe-to-toe in that game?
No, actually, we actually haven't played the game against each other at all, really. I don't know. He's been playing it, but you know, I don't live at home with him or anything, so I actually don't really talk to him that much anymore. But so I haven't played the game.
Are you a gamer in general?
What's that?
Are you a gamer in general?
Am I a gamer in general? I like to play video games. I'm more of like I like to play Madden, Call of Duty, but you know, I like the UFC game. But I kind of wore it, you know, the first week. You know, as soon as I got it, I was just playing it all day, every day. And, you know, it kind of just got hold of me real quick. But, yeah, I would play video games, but, yeah.
Hardcore gamer or just casual?
Oh, just casual, you know. Too much of it kind of, you know, I get sick of it pretty quick. You know, I just like to play a couple games and then, you know, go out. I'd rather be outside, you know, doing something, you know, all with my boys hanging out, you know, rather than sitting in just playing video games all day.
But what do you do generally when you are not getting ready for fights?
When I'm not getting ready for fights, what am I doing? I'm usually just hanging out with my friends, you know, just having a good time, you know, playing, you know, like backyard football, back style, play some whiff football, you know, go out, party, you know, go to the bar, hang out with my friends. That's it. Hang out with my girl.
All right, so basically you don't have a World of Warcraft account that you're hiding from me?
No way.
All right.
I played World of Warcraft with my wife.
All right, me either, somehow. It's amazing I haven't yet, but I know a lot of fighters have it. They don't want to admit it, but I know they have it out there.
Yeah, no, I never played it in my life.
All right, now I want to ask you a quick question about the main event, Fedor versus Barnett. Plain and simple, who takes that one?
Fedor, I mean, you know, I just said before, I'll say it again, you know, I just can't go against the guy. You know, he keeps winning, he keeps looking impressive, you know, he just dominates everybody, You know, until someone beats him, you know, I'm going to say Fedor's going to win no matter who he's fighting. It's just, he is that good, you know.
Would you ever want to take on Fedor?
Would I want to take on Fedor? Yeah, it would be an honor to fight Fedor. He'd probably rip my head off and shit down my neck, but, you know, if I was up for his weight class, I was a heavyweight, and I was big enough, and, yeah, I mean, I'd like to fight him. Like I said, it would be an honor, but, I'd go and do it and forward to it.
Yeah, well, that's a dream fight for one day. Maybe we'll see it eventually. We'll get Fedor to drop weight, maybe. That would be good.
Yeah, when he gets to 55, we'll see.
Can you imagine what he would look like at 55? Be like an emaciated Holocaust victim. That'd be a terrible-looking Fedor. All right, now I want to ask what you think about the current state of Affliction. I mean, they've only done 3 shows so far, and it's been a pretty big time gap between these 3 shows. What do you think the future holds for Affliction?
You know, I don't really know. I think the competition is good, you know, for the UFC, you know, WBC, or, you know, any other bigger shows out there, like, you know, Strikeforce and stuff. You know, competition is good because, you know, it constantly makes every promotion keep stepping up. You know, Affliction is, you know, I think they're doing the right thing. You know, they're bringing in the right guys. They're putting on, you know, really good fights. How long they'll be around, I don't know. I think, you know, it depends on, you know, when the UFC really wants to start, you know, throwing weight around, throwing their money around, and, you know, starting to take over, because, you know, I really think they could, you know, we've seen it before, you know. They really know how to shut down other promotions, you know, when push comes to shove. But, you know, I'd like to see Affliction be successful and, you know, go on to have many, many shows, and I'd like to be a part of them.
Well, if Affliction doesn't stick around, where do you want to go? Do you ultimately want to go to the UFC, or would you like to try your hand in Japan, maybe, or another company?
I'd like to go to UFC or WBC. You know, I'd much rather fight in a cage than a ring. When I fight in a ring, I feel like I'm more in there sparring or, you know, just competing. When I'm actually in a cage, you know, I feel like I'm fighting. I'm in there, you know, and I'm going to battle, or, you know, I'm ready to bleed in there. I'm ready to get somebody else bleeding. Like I said, you know, just the cage, just the environment of the cage, you know, it just makes me hungry, makes me intense, and just makes me want to get after it.
Now, you and your brother also opened up a gym a little while ago. How's that going? Team Aggression, right?
It's going pretty good, you know, for him. Me and him, we've been butting heads a little bit. You know, we don't really get along too well, you know, but we're night and day. You know, but the gym's going real well for him. I'm actually not training there right now for this fight. I'm actually training at Social Sport Fighting with Josh Crispy. It's actually a gym that that me and my brother have always cross-trained at ever since we first started training. And, you know, it's like 20 minutes from my gym. But, I'm just training over there now with, you know, Josh Crispy, you know, a bunch of guys over there, Brandon Chase, Ross Smith, you know, just a bunch of good guys, you know. Our gym is more of, jiu-jitsu guys, jiu-jitsu technicians, you know, over at South Door. It's just like, you know, it's a different style of guys, you know, it's just guys that are hungry, you know, just tough, hard-nosed, you know, guys that like to spar, throw down, you know, they have pretty good jiu-jitsu over there, but they're also just, like I said, they're just scrappy, hard-nosed guys that like to get in there and fight and scrap, and you know, it's good. It's a good switch, and, you know, it's actually motivated me a little bit more, you know. I was kind of getting a little bit sick and tired, and, you know, going to my gym, you know, and, you know, training with the same guys every day, because it's like, I'm going with this guy, and I know exactly what he's going to do, or I go with this guy, and I know exactly what he wants to do, or, you know, I spar with this guy, and I know exactly how his stand-up is. You know, it's good being over at this other gym, you know. I'm going with guys that I have no idea, you know. I'm training with new guys every single day that, you know, I have no idea, you know, what their strength is, what they like to do. So, you know, it makes me step up, and it makes the training just more intense.
Happens. Expect the unexpected, pretty much.
Yep.
Do you have any desire to open up your own gym, or are you happy just training somewhere else right now?
I mean, you know, later, you know, down the line, I'd probably like to open up my own gym, but as of right now, you know, I'm just a fighter, you know, I'm just trying to learn as much as I can and just get better and better, you know. I'm only, you know, 21 years old, and I'm not looking to open up a gym now, you know, maybe, you know, down the line when I'm older, you know, and I'm getting ready to slow you know, having a gym and creating my own fighters and training them, then I'd definitely like to open up a gym. But as of right now, I have, you know, no real desire to do that. You know, I'm just trying to train and just fight and just be a student right now.
And kick some serious ass. Do you have any final words for Chris Hordecki before you go into the ring to see him?
Any final words for Chris Hordecki?
This is your pro wrestling promo,
you know,
right here.
I hope you're ready. You know, I'm coming at you. I know he'll be ready, but you know, I'm just really looking forward to the fight. You know, it's gonna be a great card. It's an honor to fight on the card with everybody. And you know, me and Chris are gonna put on a great fight, and we're gonna get after it for sure.
All right, and that fight's going to be at Affliction Trilogy, Anaheim, California, August 1st on pay-per-view. Dan, the Upgrade Lazone, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear, gear made by fighters for fighters. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox fan or a Yankees fan, you can't deny good designs. Check them out at bostonbrawler.com. And also, MMA Worldwide Magazine. Check out the Fight Nerd column on that every other month on MMAWorldwide.com. Welcome back to Fight Nerd Radio. We just heard from Danny Upgrade Lazone. He's going to be taking on Chris Hordecki at Affliction's third event, which we'll see if that's going to be their final event of all time. Something I did not know during this interview was that he had a little falling out with his brother. I had not heard about this at all from anybody. That was breaking news for me, at least. Brian, have you ever heard about this falling out between Joe and Dan?
I haven't heard anything about it. I'm not a big follower of their careers. I certainly know of them. I knew nothing about it.
Yeah, it's a surprise to me. I didn't really want to dig too deep into it, but hopefully whatever it is won't be too bad. They can resolve their problems. Because those guys, remember, were actually one of the first interviews I had on my website from WCF5, I believe it was. Had them both together talking about some stuff. It gives a really fun story about their childhood. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, you definitely should. It involves urination.
Then I guess maybe we can blame you for the breakup if the last time they were seen together as a cohesive unit was in the presence of the Fight Nerd.
I have that effect on people, it is true. I bring out the worst in everybody.
I know my girlfriend just left me and I'm broke. Because of you!
That's true, you are here today cheating on her with me. I mean, co-hosting with me today.
You could edit that out.
I will not. Alright, now we're coming down to the wire with UFC 100 being a few days away. I want to talk about some old school UFC moments because we've been fans since way back. I first started watching with the very first UFC. I know a lot of fans probably got in around the time of Chuck Liddell, who we talked about earlier when he started having his big peak. But I've been watching it since really I started with UFC 1, got the first VHS. Brian, I'm sure you've seen the old school UFCs too.
I bought them as they originally happened. So, I mean, I was a viewer from when they were actually taking place.
So what's one of your favorite old school memories from classic UFC?
Oh, geez.
So many great moments. I mean, what do you even pick? There were so many. The tournaments were awesome. You know, the fighters back then were such characters. It's like stuff you don't really get today as much.
Everything from that, you know, from those early days. Up until 96 when I lost it on the island. Cablevision canceled it. But, you know, Tank Abbott was exciting when he first came in. Trying to anticipate Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie rematch, which injuries or whatever else always stopped. You know, that first fight with Gerard Gordeau kicking, Tula in the face.
Tyler Tula, yep.
And that was great. You know, Chemo coming in, the master of Joe Sando, and then seeing Joe San, you know.
His career, of course, flourished big time.
Yeah, he learned that it's, you know, I guess it's a lot easier to beat up women than it is to get an cage and actually win a fight. But all those early fights, the ultimate, I think, of all those early shows, if we're going to talk specifically about those, that was the first early show that really was a big deal just to see them all come back. And, you know, there were guys who you rooted for, like Keith Hackney or, you know, or anyone. You just wanted to see them all compete against each other. That was a big deal at the time, the Ultimate, the first one. And it was really cool.
Yeah, I remember the Ultimate 1 and 2. It's too bad they stopped after 2 because those were really star-studded events for that time, considering who they brought back for the most part. We saw lots of really dream matches at that point. I was a big fan of those. I miss those. I was always, you know, when I used to buy those tapes, I was always hoping it might be a third Ultimate at some point, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen. But you can dream, right? At least you got, you know, Pride of Point Grand Prix, but that's not the UFC. So what's one of the wackiest moments you can think of from old school UFC?
Oh, the wackiest moment? Jeez. There was Tank. What was it? When he hit Cal Worsham after the tap out, and Cal Worsham went crazy. And I just remember John McCarthy backing him up into the cage and said, "Knock it off! Knock it off!" You know, he turned right back into the L.A. cop. And, you know, he yelled at Cal Worsham, and there was that. I mean, any Tank Abbott moment was a wacky moment. When he would do an interview and not even fight, just talk. was a wacky moment.
Just remember, speaking of the Ultimate Ultimate from before, remember when he fought Don Fry in the Ultimate Ultimate 2, I believe it was, and he actually tried to throw Fry out of the octagon, tried to literally, like, gorilla press him over his head and chuck him out of the ring.
That wasn't even the first time he did that.
No, it wasn't.
He did that in 1996, whatever the... Was it 1996 or was it the second one? I forget who he was fighting, but there was another guy he tried to throw out of the cage. Might have been Cal Worsham.
That'd be a lot of... Well, that's back when Tank had quote-unquote skills. Or at least he was younger, so at the very least.
He's always had strength. He's always had strength. Someone recently told me that he still curls with like 100-pound weights. I mean, guy's strong.
Gorilla presses kegs every morning.
That makes two of us.
Remember, one of the best things I remember of the old UFC is that there were no weight limits, because back then it was the Ultimate, and a lot of people will remember this moment. Emmanuel Yarbrough taking on Keith Hackney. Emmanuel Yarbrough, we talked about a little bit last week, too. The, at that time, 600-pound giant taking on Keith Hackney, weighing 200 pounds. I still love to watch that fight to this day, just to watch Keith just clobber him with his broken hand. Because that was one of the crazy parts about that fight, was that Keith actually had broken his hand in the fight and had to resort to using his wrist as a club to finish off Yarbrough.
That was a very exciting fight. I mean, it's interesting because with all the regulation that's come in, and I understand the need for it, of course, and why it's necessary. But the whole idea that you need weight divisions because it favors the big guy is such bullshit. And anyone who knows MMA really knows that. I mean, Keith Hackney was so much smaller than Manny Yarbrough. Granted, Manny Yarbrough was grotesquely obese, but he clearly had the advantage. And I think in some cases you'll see the same thing.
I think one of the things with the open weight things, this is what happened in Olympic judo also. They used to have no weight classes also, or very small weight classes, but I believe in the 70s, I think it was, they started to add the weight classes because it was a Dutch judo fighter who was just really, really big. I kept plowing through all the little guys, so that's one of the reasons. So I guess that's usually something that, you know, we hear as the skill levels become more equal and more evened out, the weight becomes a big factor in it. But, you know, for those old-school UFCs, it didn't make a difference because it was just crazy altogether.
And I'll say that I've always had a big problem with the idea of weight cutting, which now they have to do because of the weight divisions, and they always had to do in high school and collegiate wrestling. It's just so unhealthy for a guy who naturally weighs 200 to cut down to 185, or whatever it may be, whatever the cut is. It's nothing, and then gain it right back for the fight, or gain more than that point. There's nothing good for the fighter internally about what's going on there with that.
Well, that's part of a fight strategy, too. I mean, that's really the fighter's choice when I cut. I'm not really a fan of cutting weight either when I used to compete in grappling. Not like I did much with those competitions, but I was never a fan of cutting weight. But for some people, it helps them out. But anyway, on to the subject of UFC 100 now, which is coming up, as I said, a few days. We're counting down the days. I know Spike TV is counting down the days with their wonderful list of top 100 UFC fights that I'm not going to watch. Are you going to be watching that, Brian?
When's it on?
Exactly my point. So let's get down to some picks, because we love to do picks. So the main event for this evening of wonderful fights is going to be Brock Lesnar taking on Frank Mir. Now, we saw these two go at it in Lesnar's UFC debut, and Mir beat him with an Ivar. And, you know, there was some controversy at that point with people saying that Mir got knocked out. If it wasn't for the restart, it wouldn't have made a difference. Mir still believes otherwise. But either way, now we're going to get a chance to finally see who's the best man. Brian, what is your pick for Lesnar versus Mir?
I kind of have a distaste for both of them.
It really is the battle of who's got the biggest ego at this point.
Yeah. I'm rooting for Mir, but I don't think he has... I think Lesnar will probably win. Because I was very happy about his initial win, but I am one of those guys who thought he wouldn't have won if the stoppage hadn't happened, I thought Brock was going to win. So I think Brock will win, but I'm certainly rooting for Mir.
We've seen Brock come a long way. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's not going to get caught in the same submission again. I'm also actually pulling for Lesnar at this point in the fight. Mir's stamina has always been questionable. We've seen Brock actually manage to go to a decision against Heath Herring. He didn't look too bad in it. I mean, you know, I think we're going to see a much better Brock than we did from the first day he stepped into the ring. That's an obvious thing we're going to see. So I'm going to pull for Lesnar in this one.
And, I mean, we don't even know where Mir is today, right? Didn't he just get injured like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and the fight had to get postponed originally?
Well, Mir is always... it was an interview he said, actually. He likes to sometimes fake injuries, so he can't tell what's real, what's not. That's his own little strategy, I guess. It's kind of odd, if you ask me. UFC's been really hyping stuff as being like one of their biggest fights ever, which is kind of funny. I mean, really, it's, you know, you have two guys who aren't really very likable at all, which is unfortunate, saying they're hyping this to being the greatest main event of UFC.
You know, they can hype it as much as they want. It doesn't have that feel. I can tell you on the street right now, no one's really excited about this fight. It's there, and we're interested, but it's not like Chuck against Tito or, you know, any of the other fights that were real big after that. Sarah against Hughes, even. Honestly, I'm interested because it's the heavyweights and it's Lesnar, but there's no buzz about this fight from anyone I've spoken to.
It's a lot of hype, but how much is it going to really pay off? I mean, personally, I think this fight's going to end really fast again, also. I don't expect to see us going past the first round. If it does, the longer it goes, I believe the more it favors Lesnar, since he can actually probably stand up longer than Mir can.
Mir's better on the ground.
If he goes that far, and even if on the ground, Lesnar has that huge weight advantage. He's a big man. We've seen him take out Herring and just holding him down a lot of that fight. That weight's going to be a big factor, that size advantage that he does have.
Do you think Mir's better than Heath on the ground? I mean, I think he is.
I think Heath had better stamina, and with that better stamina, he couldn't do much against Lesnar. That's that's what I see coming out of that. So, really, Mir's stamina is a big question in this fight, as it always is in his past fights. But either way, that's two of us pulling for Lesnar right now. In another main event, we're going to see Georges St-Pierre defend his welterweight title against Thiago Alves in a pretty compelling fight. Alves has been going on a storm lately, taking out guys, and Georges St-Pierre, same with him. He's really right now hit the peak of his career. This is a tough one to call, I think. Brian, what are your thoughts on this fight?
I can't go against GSP against anyone at this point. He just seems like perfectly conditioned or perfectly Vaselined or whatever it may be, undefeatable in his division right now. He just seems to be a class above. Whether he is or isn't, that's for anyone's debate.
He's become a very cerebral fighter in the past few fights he's had, especially at Greg Jackson's camp. Some of the stuff they said, even at his fight at UFC 94 against BJ Penn, they're like, we noticed that he had very tiny shoulders, so we want to wrestle him to make his body tired. Or some horrible French-Canadian accent like that. So he's become a very smart fighter, and that's working to his advantage.
Yeah, a very smart fighter. Rub Vaseline all over his body so no one can get him in the guard. I mean, come on.
That greasy Canadian.
But with that being said, I think he's going to beat Alves. I mean, I think GSP is probably the best fighter in the UFC currently.
I'm having a hard time really still saying who's going to win this one. I mean, I do like Georges St-Pierre, like you said, for the same reasons, but Alves has been cleaning out the division. Apparently, whoever, you know, has been in his way, he's taken out. And Alves, I think, could be a serious threat to him. So I'm going to pull for Georges St-Pierre, but it's not with 100% confidence. It's with a pretty big glimmer of doubt, just because Alves is really on top of his game. This is going to be easily the best Alves we've seen and the best Georges St-Pierre we've seen, I'm sure.
Well, I think that. I think this is going to be the best Georges St-Pierre we see, because unlike so many of his opponents, this is one that he really needs to rise to the occasion for. He really needs to show you that he's as good as the hype says, or that he's proven himself to be against what may or may not be a lesser division in terms of the competitors in it. But I still got to pull for him, because I think he has only shown that he's going to find a way to win. Not discounting anything from Alves, but come on, it's GSP, man.
Well, like you said before, every fighter eventually has to succumb to a fall, and this could be his fall here against Alves, so we're going to find out and see. And another match we're going to talk about, we're not going to give too many picks for this event. I want to talk about Henderson versus Bisping. Dan, Hendo, Hollywood, whatever his nickname is now, Henderson's going to take on Michael, the Count Bisping, who are both coaches of Tough this season. This is interesting because Bisping has been training a lot for takedowns, and that might be really the worst thing to do, to go against a wrestler by training to do what his forte is. So that's a whole other story. Brian, what is your opinion on this match? Who's going to take it?
Well, I've never been a big Hendo fan. I know you and many others have been. I just never have been. I think he's a great fighter. But I think Bisping is a fight against Henderson away from being one notch higher. And I think he's been going in that direction. I think Bisping's a very good fighter. At times he has some boring fights. But in general, he's a very good fighter. This fight will be interesting. This fight's not in England. Am I correct?
You are correct.
And so many of Bisping's fights, the UFC tries to make them in England to create a great environment, and also use that, obviously, to get more press in a new marketplace, because they have a British fighter on a British show. I'm going to go with Bisping, because I think Bisping is one of those guys that's the future of the UFC. And I think Hendo has had a great career, but I think Hendo's career is starting to wind down.
I would agree on that point with Henderson winding down, and Bisping is on the way up. But at the same time, I think Bisping might not be ready yet for Henderson. We've seen Henderson's striking improve over time. You know, really, at this point, Henderson is a gatekeeper, which is, it's sad to say. I'm a fan of Hendo. He has become a gatekeeper. And it is tough to call, but I think against Bisping, we're going to see, I think, what might be the final display of Henderson's best. I think we're going to see him probably outstrike him, take him down, work for submissions, probably not going to get him. And that'll really be the end of it. I mean, it's going to be it won't be such a straightforward domination. There'll be a little back and forth. But I see ultimately Henderson getting a decision. I don't think it's going to finish. I mean, do you think it's going to have a finish for this match?
Oh, I can't predict that either way. I think Bisping will win, but let me just add, in response to your remarks, that I would like to see Hendo win. I really would. I think it would be nice. I think it would be nice for him to say, fuck you, I'm out of Gatekeeper. Excuse my language, fight nerd. I know I'm not supposed to use any coarse language on your program.
It's too late for that now.
Well, there's a reason they created Edit.
If only I know how to do that.
There you go. I'd like to see Hendo win, but I just... you think just maybe one last great fight for Hendo. I kind of think this is going to be one more kick down the ladder for Hendo.
Well, we'll see what happens. So that's our picks. We're both agreeing on Lesnar. We're both agreeing on Georges St. Pierre. But when it comes to Hendo versus Bisping, we're split down the middle. So we're going to see what happens at the end of this week. We'll have the fallout from UFC 100 come up next week. It's going to be a pretty big event, maybe more so than they're claiming it to be. But either way, this is The Fight Nerd. I'm joined today by Brian Last. You can check us out on thefightnerd.com. Thanks for listening.